Americans are casting their ballots 15 days before the election. I'm Dave Anthony, Fox News. Early in-person voting underway in 8 more states. None are considered toss-up battlegrounds. Vice President Harris will go to 3 of those today, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and Michigan, where Fox's Peter Ducey reports from Royal Oak. In each stop, the vice president will be joined by an anti-Trump Republican.
Liz Cheney, the Harris campaign is trying to reach Republican women who they think are disenchanted with Donald Trump. And so expect to hear Liz Cheney talk a lot about how she thinks Donald Trump is a threat to democracy.
Now, the Harris campaign and Democrats raised another $633 million last quarter. In September alone, they took in more than double the amount of campaign cash as the Trump administration and Republicans. In about an hour, former President Trump will be in North Carolina, but Democratic Governor Roy Cooper not putting out the welcome mat.
Donald Trump is coming to Asheville today. I'm asking that he not share lies or misinformation while he is here.
The former president's been very critical of the federal response to the Hurricane Helene flooding disaster. He'll also hold a rally later in Greenville and meet with church leaders in Concord, North Carolina. The House task force investigating the first Trump assassination attempt has a report this morning calling it preventable, detailing Secret Service communication failures stopping the gunman Thomas Crooks.
Local officials had information on Crooks around 5 p.m. that local time. They started sending messages to the Secret Service between 5:38 and 5:51 p.m. local time. It is unclear still to this day if the detail protecting Trump ever received them. He remained on stage, and Trump was shot around 6:11, 6:12 p.m.
That's Fox Business Network's Lauren Simonetti, the former president grazed in the ear. A Trump win at the Supreme Court dismissing his ex-lawyer Michael Cohen's attempt to revive a lawsuit. Cohen alleged he was imprisoned in 2020 when President Trump was still in office, after writing a book critical of him. America's listening to Fox News.
If you're living with dry age-related macular degeneration or dry AMD, you may be at risk for developing geographic atrophy or GA. GA can be unpredictable and progress rapidly, leading to irreversible vision loss. Now there's something you can do to
slow it down. Slower.
iZurvey is proven to slow GA progression.
iZurvey gets GA going slower.
iZurvey or Avacincaptad Pegol is a prescription eye injection used to treat GA. Don't take it if you have an infection or active swelling in or around your eye. iZurvey can cause eye infection, retinal detachment, or increased risk of wet AMD. iZurvey may temporarily increase eye pressure. Your vision may be impaired after an eye injection or exam. Don't delay. Ask your doctor about iZurvey today.
iZurvey gets GA going slower.
Visit iZurvey.com. That's iZERVAY.com.
Broadcasting Americanism from the York Heating and Air Conditioning and ACUMA.com studios. 560 KBLU.
From the News 11 Information Desk, I'm Zachary Moran Norris. Well, the second annual Yuma Fall Fest wrapped up this weekend at the Yuma County Fairgrounds. Families enjoyed the fun rides, food vendors, and performances. The rock band Hinder headlined the festival Friday night. The band is best known for their 2006 hit, Lips of an Angel, which reached number 3 on the Billboard Hot 100 charts. The festival kicked off Thursday and wrapped up Sunday night. Also happening over the weekend, the second gentleman of the U.S., Doug Emhoff, visited Yuma County to campaign for his wife, Kamala Harris, as well as Tim Walz. Reproductive rights and the economy were some of the topics Emhoff touched on in his Get Out the Vote tour here in Yuma County. Nearly 300 community members attended the rally. The second gentleman made a quick stop at local staple Mr. G's before kicking off a canvas launch. His last stop was knocking on some doors, talking to local voters. Early voting has already started here in Arizona, and you have now until Election Day on November 5th to cast your vote. Catch us on News 11 tonight at 5, 6, and 10 p.m. for your latest local news, weather, and sports.
Illegal aliens pouring into our nation, bringing drugs and crime with them, threatening our safety. And all the while, Bidenomics and skyrocketing inflation are making it harder for middle-class families to make ends meet. Kamala Harris and the D.C. Democrats' dangerous agenda is costing Arizona everything. Donald Trump is fighting to fix the Democrats' mess and make America great again. But he needs backup he can trust. And Carrie Lake is Trump tough. In the Senate, Carrie Lake will stand alongside President Trump to end Kamala's open border agenda, stop the flow of illegal aliens and fentanyl into America, protect Arizona. And Carrie Lake will work to end inflation and lower the cost of living for middle-class families. Support Trump-endorsed Republican Carrie Lake for U.S. Senate. Vote early today and help make America great again.
Arizona's Bold AeroPack paid for and is responsible for the content of this advertising. Not authorized by any candidate or candidates committee. www.apac.com.
The following program on 560 KBLU is a paid program. All opinions expressed by the program participants are solely their current opinions and do not reflect the opinions of 560 KBLU, El Dorado Broadcasters, LLC, their respective parent companies or affiliates, or the companies with which the program participants are affiliated and may have been previously disseminated by them. The program participants' opinions are based upon information they consider reliable, but neither 560 KBLU, El Dorado Broadcasters, nor its affiliates, nor the companies with which such participants are affiliated, warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such.
Welcome to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by the law firm of Deason, Garner, and Hanson, hosted by attorneys Sean Garner and Adam Hanson.
Welcome to another edition of Life, Death, and the Law. I'm Sean Garner, attorney with Deason, Garner, and Hanson. I'm in studio here with Adam Hanson, and Martine is with us running the boards. So I want to get started off today with a little story about my scripture study with my kids last night. Each night we study a portion of the scriptures, and the portion that we were studying last night was about tithing. So there was a little story that went along with it that this child wanted a cat from the cat store. And, of course, they didn't live in Yuma because there's a bazillion cats for free in Yuma. But either way, probably ought to edit that out.
It's cats everywhere.
Because there's cat lovers.
It's a global epidemic.
There's childless cat lovers out there that are going to cancel us for that comment. Anyway. There was a cat that this child liked, and it was $10. And the mom said, "Do you have $10? "Nope." "Okay, so let's go home. Why don't you earn $10, and then you can come back and buy the cat." So they go home, and the mom gives the child chores: washing windows, doing the dishes, vacuuming, setting the table, basically contributing to the family chores and being a productive member. At the end, the child earns $10 and goes back to the pet store and then realizes that she needs to pay tithing. She needs to pay one of the $10, 10%, to the Lord for tithing. And she gives the mom the dollar and says, "This is for the Lord. This is to give back to him. And I'm not going to be able to afford the cat." And she goes, "Well, if you do this right now, you have to go home without the cat." And the child makes the decision, and it's the correct one, and they go home without the cat. So I asked my kids, other than that, did the child make the right decision? And, of course, them in that easy situation where they're not the one wanting the cat, they said yes. Of course, it's harder when you're the one wanting that object and faced with the dilemma whether or not to pay back to your religious organization. Tithing is 10% for a lot of churches, but it could be whatever you're able to contribute for other churches. And I think it's very important, an important law of finance, that you give back to the Lord first, because he's given us everything. The other thing that I wanted to point out that my kids brought up was the more important thing that child learned was contributing to the family. They learned washing windows was important. Helping out with dishes was important. Vacuuming was important. Yeah, they got some money from it, but that was kind of a byproduct of the lessons that they learned to contribute to the house. And they all kind of pointed out that the money was going to come and go, whether it was for a cat or candy or something else. But the lessons that they learned in developing that work ethic were going to stay with them. And that's something that our clients, Adam, always ask us to draft into their trust, something that is going to help their children be productive members of society when they receive their inheritance. And the reality is there's no trust provision that we can draft that's going to take a child that has not been trained and brought up correctly through life to become automatically a productive member because of the terms of the trust. So that's on us as parents to train our children that it's not about getting the most money for the least amount of work. It's about learning how to work and gain the most amount of skills that contribute back to society and develop you as an individual. That's what life is about, and that's why we've been placed on Earth. What's your take on that?
No, I agree with you. What you mentioned that we were going to talk about propositions.
Oh.
So leading up to this show, Sean's like, "I want to talk about the propositions
yeah,
that are coming up on the ballot because we're getting close to the election day." And you and I, you've already voted, I believe, right?
No, I haven't.
Oh, okay. But you've got your ballot.
I don't, actually. I didn't receive it yet.
Really?
Yeah.
Must be some fraud.
Some ballot harvester out there took it.
I have my, I sent mine in yesterday, but Sean has this book here. That's why when you asked me my take on what you just talked about, what's the connection here?
Well, the connection is I'm reading through these comments, and it's quite obvious to me that individuals that are voting one way or another have an agenda as to what they want the government to do for them. And my philosophy is the government is there to keep people from infringing upon my rights, not to do anything proactively for me, but to keep bad actors out of my way.
Sure.
And they are the number one bad actor. So to keep out of
who,
my
the government?
Way. Yeah, myself, okay. Right? So the propositions, I look at that in that context. I always have a three-pillar test to whether or not a law should be enacted. That is, is it necessary to preserve my liberty? Is it necessary to preserve my property? Is it necessary to preserve my life? If it's not necessary to preserve any of those three things from infringements by other individuals, then it's not a proper law. We should be reliant on our own contributions and our own charitable dispositions to work in society and produce, not to have the government that doesn't produce anything take from one person and provide to another.
I think we've been coddled in our society, in the American culture, to believe that the government is responsible for promulgating our rights. And I think if we couch this discussion, when you go into the ballot box, I like to think of who actually gives me my rights. And that would be our creator, right? Our supreme creator, God.
Right.
So we are born free. And that's what our founders reiterated in our founding documents, that we are children of God, that he gives us our rights to be free, and that the government is really only there for us to delegate some power to, with the expectation that we can continue to do those other things that you talked about, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And we've talked about this before on our show, and Sean, I think it's really important to bring up, because when you're going into the ballot box, I want you to think of that. You know, does this limit government to the extent that I can be freer out of my life, or is this necessary, this law that I'm voting for, this proposition, is it going to allow me to continue to go to work every day? And if I couldn't go to work, or I didn't need to worry about going to work and providing for my family, I could go out and do this, you know, and I won't be infringing on anybody else's rights. Therefore, I need to delegate this particular power or this authority to the government so that they can do it for me, so that I can free up time to go to work and provide for my family. That's really what the police is about, the police or the executive branch is about, right?
Right.
I don't have time to go looking for bad guys during my day. So I say, okay, I'll delegate a little bit of my authority to the executive branch so that they can send out the police. The police are patrolling every day because I don't have time to go to work and patrol the neighborhoods.
Absolutely.
Did you say that's
absolutely
pretty close?
The government isn't there to bring me food or to give me money, or to build me a house, or to provide me a job. The government is there to make sure that the people that would prevent me from doing that or taking my property have some criminal penalties. That they are violating God-given right that is supported and written in the Constitution. We talk all of the time about constitutional rights. Well, actually, the Constitution says we have all the rights. The Constitution isn't a document that gives citizens rights. It's a document that limits the government from infringing upon all of our rights, which are God-given, and hems in the government from taking away any of those rights, some that are written down specifically. But just because they're not written down doesn't mean they're not given to us. There are 10 specifically in the Bill of Rights that are written down, but those are only by way of example. Those aren't a comprehensive overview of all of our rights.
So having said that, I think for you listeners, or you that are watching this on YouTube or whatever, wherever you get your podcasts, we are Arizona-based. We practice law in Arizona. And so the discussion we're going to have this morning or today is about Arizona propositions. I would venture to guess that you have a slate of propositions in your own particular state or jurisdiction, wherever you are, and they're going to be very similar to some of ours, because what we find is that you have these organizations that tend to go state to state nationwide and try to impose their particular agenda on that particular state. And so there might be some very similar propositions in your state. What I was surprised about, Sean, was if you don't read this very closely, you might miss it, but a lot of these propositions are trying to amend our actual state constitution, the Arizona Constitution. When I see that, that's kind of like a red flag to me. Amending our constitution is much more invasive than, let's say, a statute.
And I like statutes a lot more than amending the constitution, because it goes with the flow of society a lot smoother. When you amend the constitution, you can have maybe a loud majority in there at the time that amends it in a way that is maybe not proper for future generations, and it's very, very difficult to go back in and change it without a supermajority again.
It's very difficult. And so when I see an amendment to the Constitution proposed as a proposition, I'm automatically, and this is just me, I don't know how you feel about it, but I'm automatically, by nature, skeptical of, it's got a high bar in my mind. It's got to be something very fundamental, a very fundamental protection that it's going to offer us from the government in order for it to be ingrained in our Constitution. Save that, then I would rather see it as a statute. So I might even not, I might vote no on a proposition, even if it seems really good. And I really agree with it.
Yeah.
Just because it's going to amend our Constitution as opposed to...
That sound great on the surface.
Yes. And they would be good if they're done through statute means as opposed to amending our Constitution. So something to think about when you're going through and thinking about these, or you're reviewing. In Arizona, they send out these little flyers. So Sean's got the full booklet. I don't know what I did with mine. I got that like a month and a half ago.
You read it, committed it to memory, and then voted.
Right. No, but I did go through it, and I circled all the things that I was going to do, and then I got this other little pamphlet. It's like a one-page sheet, looks like a newspaper, that has a breakdown of all the propositions. So I would encourage you to look through those, and when you're looking through that, be very cognizant about, is this amending my constitution, the state constitution, or is it just amending or creating a new statute? Statutes are easier to adjust than the amendments to Constitution. So those are some basic principles that Sean and I have, we've discussed it. And I don't vote just because Sean says something doesn't mean I'm going to vote for it yet, you know, and vice versa.
Is the operative term, because usually when I tell you about it enough, I educate you to the extent that you understand
thank you. That's correct.
I have the proper position.
That's true.
Okay.
Having said that, but I do, Sean and I tend to align a lot on some of these issues and how we're going to vote. Not all the time, and maybe that will bear out in our conversation here, but I think as we've had this conversation just now, we kind of go looking at this through a principled lens, and these are our principles. They might not be your principles, but these are the principles that I use when I go to the ballot box or when I'm reviewing a proposition or voting for a candidate. These are the principles. Maybe I don't like that candidate personally. Maybe he's ugly or she's ugly, or maybe they, you know, don't speak the way that I like.
Yeah, I think that's one of the major reasons RFK isn't on the presidential ballot right now. I had to drop out just because people had a hard time understanding him because of his throat
issue. Voice, yeah. Yeah, I've heard people say, I can't stand to listen to him. I get used to it after a little while. You know, I don't really care about that, but maybe some people, that's just abrasive enough to... So I don't really care about the characteristics of that person. And one thought that I've had recently, Sean, is that, like, we have such a divide, and you talked about this with Nancy, or not, it wasn't Nancy, it was Susan Sorensen a couple weeks ago on this podcast, where we were talking about the great divide between parties or ideologies, and it's, I feel like it's so focused on that individual, whether it's Biden, Kamala, or Trump, and their personality. And the thought is, like, if I'm going to vote for Kamala or I'm going to vote for Trump, then I think that they're perfect. And that's not the case. Like, I don't care about the person necessarily. I care about the policies. And I'm willing to elect a person if they're going to maintain principles that I agree with, because I recognize that they're not perfect. Nobody's perfect. And I'm not looking for perfection in a person. You're never going to find that. So I look for policies and principles. And so having said that, that's how we kind of couch or look at these propositions. We actually have to go to a break. So now we've prefaced it. We'll come back and we'll talk about the propositions that are here in Arizona and kind of what we think and how we come down on it. Maybe it's not how you come down on it, but we'll come back to that right after this.
Coming up, more thought-provoking conversations on life, death, and the law right after this.
Want to hear more Life, Death, and the Law? You can find it on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and YouTube, or any other platform you listen to your podcasts.
Forecast calling for warmer temperatures this week than last week, although we're around average this week. 90 is where we should be. We'll be there today. 90 with sunshine, 62 overnight tonight. Sunny and 94 tomorrow, sunny and 96 on Wednesday.
Truckmates, Yuma's Fix Up Your Pickup Truck Store is Yuma's home for Snug Top shells and lids. Snug Top, designed and manufactured to the highest standard. Industry-leading quality and trend-setting design to protect and complement your vehicle. That's Snug Top. Truckmates is also the home of expert spray and bed liners, spraying mil-spec protective coatings, committed to unwavering excellence and unparalleled customer service. Expert liners, with available national warranty coverage and installed by Yuma's most experienced spray on team at Truckmates. Truckmates is also the home for BDS suspensions, the highest quality aftermarket suspension lift kits, leveling kits, and accessories for 4x4 off-road trucks and Jeep enthusiasts. And don't forget 3M window tinting, the originators of window tinting with nationwide lifetime warranty at Truckmates. That's expert spray and bed liners, BDS suspensions, 3M window tinting, and Snug Top, all at Truckmates. 32nd Street next to Lowe's.
You're listening to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by Deason, Garner, and Hanson, the law firm that has been voted Yuma's best 6 years in a row.
Welcome back to Life, Death, and the Law. I'm attorney Adam Hanson. I've got my partner Sean here. We were talking about, in the last segment, the upcoming propositions here in Arizona. We're Arizona-based attorneys, and so we're talking a lot on this show about Arizona-specific propositions. I'm willing to bet if you're listening to this or watching this in a different jurisdiction or forum that you're going to have very similar propositions in your state. There tends to be this push for organizations throughout the United States to thrust upon all the states their agendas. And so we've seen in the last, I don't know, decade or 15 years, outside money here in Arizona coming in to push different legislation propositions. And so I'm always wary of that kind of stuff. And having said that, one of the first propositions, Sean's looking up a hot topic one that he wants to talk about.
Yeah, so they're very mundane and I think kind of benign ones, and there are others that are very, very significant. So I'll start at the top of the list of the ones that I think are most significant. Number one is Prop 139. Now, I want to say it in a way that is easier for the listeners to remember this when you're voting. Think 139, 39 weeks, because this is about abortion. And what they want to do is amend the Constitution for Arizona to make abortion a constitutional right rather than allowing voters to vote each term whether or not what restrictions or what ability individuals have with the right to abortion. So that's a big one. I think having a constitutional right to abortion personally is a very bad idea. Like Adam said, if there's anything that's going to amend the Constitution, we want to look at it with very strict scrutiny. That means unless it's going to provide us with additional rights to keep the government out of our life and preserve our inherent rights to life, liberty, and property, then we ought to vote it down. And that's one right here that is taking away the life of an unborn child. In fact, all it says in there is that it minimizes the ability to abort at 15 weeks and can go up from there. So it doesn't say where it maxes out at, and that's why I say Prop 139 is easy to remember. Think 39 weeks, that's full gestation, and that is the potential of this amendment, is allowing abortion up until that time. So I'm voting no on that one. That's a pretty easy one. Some other ones out there are more down the middle, like restaurant workers. There's a proposition to allow employers to pay the servers 25% less than the minimum wage, because if they can show that the tips make up the difference, and so they'll still make minimum wage with the tips, but they get an hourly wage that's 25% less. Currently, the law is they can pay them $2 less than the minimum wage, and as long as they can show that the tips make up the difference. It does a little bit to take the shackles off the employers as to what they have to do when they're employing somebody. I think that anybody that's willing to work for whatever salary it is that is being offered should be between the employer and the server, or whatever it might be, whether it's a farm laborer or a secretary or a plumber or anyone else. But this at least provides a little bit more leeway for restaurant owners to hire servers. I think this would bring down the cost of food in general and allow the free market to run more efficiently. What's your position on that? Do you think they should have the right to pay them 25% less rather than just $2 less?
Yeah, I voted yes on that. We're business owners, and I think if they can... So it sounds mean right off the bat that these big bad employers have the ability to pay them less than minimum wage, but it's not without proof. They've got to prove some particular things. The reality is you can't pay them less than minimum wage unless you can show that they're making way more than minimum wage with these tips added on. So they're actually going to be doing better off. I think anytime that you try to mandate wages to an employer, that's a quick way to make business go dead in your particular jurisdiction or state. And people are going to flee from that, employers particularly. And we're seeing that in California. I mean, all sorts of companies have left California because of their overbearing policies towards an employer. I think we skipped. So that was Proposition 138.
139. Oh, so sorry. That was
138,
yeah,
for 138. The wages thing.
Yeah, wait. Till
I'm going to back up and go to 137, I think it is. No. We'll come back to that one. You like that one. That's your favorite, 137. I'm going to go to 136. Okay, so Prop 136, it amends the Constitution, okay? Or it's proposed to amend the Arizona Constitution. It authorizes a person to bring a lawsuit to try to stop a voter-proposed initiative from being placed on the ballot if that person sues at least 100 days before an election and claims the voter-proposed initiative would violate the United States Constitution or the Arizona Constitution.
So just in summary, some of these propositions may not be constitutional. And currently the law is you can't actually sue about the unconstitutionality of a proposition until it's actually passed. So we have to wait till it becomes law to sue on it. And the proposition is that we can actually sue 100 days prior to the vote to say the proposition shouldn't be on the ballot anyway, because it's unconstitutional. We can't vote it into law even if we wanted to, because it goes contrary to the Constitution.
So I voted no on that, mainly because, there, in my opinion, when we file a lawsuit as an attorney, there has to be some sort of harm. And in this case, there is no harm. We don't know the harm because it hasn't actually been enacted. The act would have to be enacted for us to then receive that harm. And I feel like this is an end-around way of trying to negate the voters' will, which I think should be going forward. In other words, what this proposition is trying to do is say, before it even gets enacted, you have a 100-day window to kill it, even though the voters voted for it and they want it to happen.
Yeah.
So I don't agree with that. I think it needs to be put into motion, and then if it's unconstitutional, then we'll test that through the Supreme Court method, but it has to be put in effect first.
That's interesting, because I tell you picked a good one, because that's one I disagree on.
Okay.
I think that if it's unconstitutional, we should be able to bring the matter to the court. There are two types of lawsuits that you can bring. One is for redress when a harm has occurred, and one is to stop the harm from occurring. both actions that are available to us now. For example, I'm going to bring up an example off the top of my head right now where a young lady, she was going to graduate high school, and she got involved in a high school prank. And, you know, it teetered on being grave enough that she wouldn't be able to walk for her graduation. And her dad sued and said, no, because the harm, we don't know how, first of all, she's convicted of doing this, and the harm is going to be irreparable. We can't give her back that opportunity to walk at her graduation. So we need to file an injunction, allow her to walk at the graduation, and then if she committed whatever it was, then assign a penalty that conforms with the crime. And I think those are appropriate. So those laws or those lawsuits are typically reserved for irreparable harm. So I could see where you're coming from, because this isn't irreparable harm passing the proposition. We can go ahead and file a complaint that it's unconstitutional. But why let it get that far?
I think I can see that mindset. That in addition, though, again, going back to our principles that we talked about in the very beginning in that first segment, my first thing is this amending the Constitution of Arizona, or is this just a statutory
implementation?
And this is amending the Constitution. I would steer clear of that. For those reasons that you're stating, I might even be more willing in that particular sense if it were brought up as a statute, but not as a constitutional amendment. I think that's a little overbearing. I think it's an overreach of government. When I read this, the first thing that came to mind was some sort of election issues. I felt like this was trying to negate the ability of the voters to put in place things that they feel are necessary in their jurisdiction. And one of those might be, I don't know, voter ID. You know, that's required when you go to the ballot box. And this would allow for a lawsuit to happen within that 100-day window saying, no, that's unconstitutional because we're the opposite party that doesn't agree with voter ID laws. We want to kill that right off the bat. All I saw this was is ongoing litigation, ways for the attorneys to get more rich and for it to slow or to hamper or chill our ability as voters to move things along legislatively. That's what I saw it as.
So let me put it in a frame that I think you would agree with. You want less laws rather than more. And if there's a question as to whether or not we need an additional law, if it goes right down the middle, if it's on the fence as to whether or not it's better or worse for society, would you side with not having the law? So less laws as opposed to more laws?
Generally, I would like to say yes.
And then would you agree that it's harder to get rid of a bad law than it is to implement a good law?
Absolutely.
So that's my point here. If this is put in place, it stops the proposition from going forward and potentially becoming implemented. We would then have to go back and get it out of, we would undo it after the fact. And so there's a higher burden of proof when it goes to show that we've got to undo a law rather than stop a law from coming into effect in the first place. So what this is actually doing is actually it's preventing the government from putting on the ballot a law or a proposition that would become law that was unconstitutional in the first place. So it prevents bad laws.
I understand that logic. What I didn't like when I read this through, I'm like, well, who's the arbiter of that?
The court?
No, it's the person bringing the lawsuit. Because you think it's unconstitutional doesn't mean it's unconstitutional.
No, but the court gets to decide.
The Arizona court, but
yeah.
The United States Supreme Court decides what's constitutional.
No,
what's
this
not
is only for Arizona court or Arizona Constitution. It could.
I don't know. I mean, it doesn't say that here.
Yeah, it says amending Article 4, Part 1, Section 1 of the Constitution of the Arizona.
Sure, but it says 100 days before an election and claims the voter-proposed initiative would violate the United States Constitution or the Arizona Constitution.
Okay. Well, and we're all subject to the United States Constitution.
Sure. So I guess my thing is here, I want to see that. We already have a remedy. We don't need an additional remedy. And who's the arbiter of saying that something's constitutional or not? I can file any lawsuit that I want saying, oh, that's unconstitutional. It means nothing until it goes all the way to the Supreme Court, which we already have that remedy in place. So number one, there hasn't been a harm done 100 days prior to this even being, you know, enacted. So there is no harm to remedy, number one. Number two, we already have a method of undoing it, and that's through the Supreme Court, which this would have to go through anyway. You have to go all the way to the Supreme Court to undo this 100.
You could go to the Arizona Supreme Court and have it undone.
Sure, but that's, so say that.
Yeah, that's true.
Say that. If you're going to amend the Arizona
Constitution. I still agree with you. I'm just saying that's true.
But you can't broadly say, oh, I'm going to file a lawsuit in Arizona and say this is unconstitutional for the United States. Like, you can't, you can do that, but it's not going to work. You still have to go all the way to the Supreme Court to make that work, and they have to agree with you, which is the remedy that you already have.
Yeah, unless you could find that it's unconstitutional under Arizona Constitution.
Yeah, so limit, okay, so going back to having said that, another reason why I voted no is if you're going to say this is only in Arizona and the Arizona Constitution, then say that. But you're being way broad, and you're trying to pull all this stuff in. And that makes me skeptical.
Okay.
Anyway,
next
so
one.
That was 136. Let's get to yours.
I want to do another controversial one.
Well, let's talk about yours. Oh, man, we're running out of time. Martine says, no, stop talking. We have to go to break.
Okay.
Fine, Martine. But coming back, I'm gonna force you to talk about Prop 137. This is your favorite one.
Okay.
This is a judicial one.
Oh, boy.
Term limits on on judges.
That's
yes or no?
Sure. It'll put people to sleep, but I like it.
Why would it put people to sleep? That's like a national conversation right now.
Okay, sounds good.
Okay, we'll try it. We'll come back right after this.
Coming up, more thought-provoking conversations on life, death, and the law right after this.
Hey, Yuma, Dave Ramsey here. If you listen to our show or know anything about us, then you know I only recommend products and services I trust and I believe in. That's why when it comes to protecting your assets and planning for your loved one's future, you've got to call my friends Sean Garner and Adam Hansen at the law firm of Deason, Garner, and Hansen. I encourage you to take the first step and attend a free, no-pressure seminar and learn all of your options. The firm of Deason, Garner, and Hansen has been educating the Yuma community for over 40 years, and this is the only area of law that they practice. Sean and Adam believe in giving free education to help people make smart decisions about their assets and help them leave a legacy for their family that they can be proud of. Schedule a free personal consultation today. Call 783-4575 or visit YumaEstatePlanning.com.
Hello, my name is Denise Coronado, Director of Volunteer Services. Hospice of Yuma is thrilled to be the first hospice organization in Yuma County and one of nine in the state of Arizona to achieve the Level 5 We Honor Veteran status. This honor reflects years of dedicated efforts by staff and volunteers to meet veterans' needs. We're committed to providing the highest level of care and support to veterans and their families. To become a Vet-to-Vet volunteer or for more information about Hospice of Yuma services, please call our office at 928-343-2222 or visit our website at hospiceofyuma.com.
Country music star Lauren Elena live at the 12th Annual Bridget's Gift Western Dance and Barbecue. Sponsored in part by Barclay Ag and Alexander Automotive Group. Plus special guest Coffey Anderson.
With the red, white, and blue. For these stars and stripes.
Saturday, October 26th at Cocopah Casino. Dinner is included. Tickets at bridgetsgift.com.
Brought to you in part by Cocopah Casino, Foundation of Yuma Regional Medical Center, Naquin Precision Earth Moving, YRMC Cancer Center, Yuma Pest and Termite, 1 Hour Air Conditioning and Heating, Blue Cross Blue Shield of Arizona, Alluvial Media LLC, Lamar, Entravision, Dell Outdoor, Fox 9, 13 on Your Side, ABC 5, NBC 11, and 560 KBLU.
Special interest from out of state just can't leave Arizona alone. Prop 140 would make our elections confusing and unfair. Prop 140 would add 15 new amendments to our state constitution and make our elections look more like California. The last thing we need in Arizona are policies from California. We need to protect Arizona's ballot by voting no on Prop 140. We don't want Arizona to look like California and all its failed policies. Because of the way California conducts elections, liberal progressive policies have bankrupted the state, created a safe haven for illegal immigrants, and raised taxes on hardworking people. Don't let special interests import California policies into Arizona. Vote no on Prop 140. Don't California our Arizona. Remember, vote no on Prop 140. Paid for by No on Prop 140 Committee.
This is 560 KBLU, part of the El Dorado Broadcasters Radio Network.
You're listening to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by Deason, Garner, and Hanson, the law firm that has been voted Yuma's best 6 years in a row.
Welcome back to Life, Death, and the Law. We're talking about the ever-exciting topic of propositions that we get to vote for. Now, this is the point in the ballot when you're going down, you vote for, you know, the president, you vote for the senators, and you vote for your representatives, and then you get to the propositions, and a lot of people, they don't know. They're not well informed about the propositions. So that's the purpose of this show, and we apologize in advance if it's a little bit dry, but this one is a very interesting one. It talks about term limits. Now, I'm a huge advocate.
On judges. On Arizona judges, right?
Yes. So I'm a huge advocate of term limits in general. I think that there should be maximum 12 years of service, regardless of the position in the federal government that it is.
Yeah.
So whether it's a Supreme Court judge, whether it's a senator, because right now there's no term limits on senators, whether it's a congressperson, no term limit on congressmen and women, and so it's only on the president. And we've found that it's highly effective in keeping that balance of power equal with the president, but we've got these senators that are in there for life, and they wield tremendous amount of power. We need to put term limits on them. Well, this allows us to get a little bit close. Well, we currently are closer to that in Arizona. Right now in Arizona, there are term limits on judges. So if you're a trial court judge, it's every 6 years. It's every 4 years if you're a trial court judge, and if you are an appellate court judge, it's every 6 years. So let me just give you a little breakdown as to what a trial court and appellate court judge is. The superior court, that's where 95% of the cases are heard and decided. That is a trial court judge, and those judges are elected every 4 years. An appellate court judge would be the Court of Appeals of Arizona or the Supreme Court of Arizona. Those are both appellate court judges. Those are state courts. And although we hear a lot about the Supreme Court of the United States, a fraction of the cases actually go to either federal courts or the Supreme Court of the United States. 99% of the cases that affect us every day happen in state courts, and 95% of those happen in trial courts. And so we want to have accountability of our trial court judges and make sure they get elected every 4 years. This proposition, this 137, would eliminate the requirement that they run for re-election every 4 years. And I think that's ridiculous. I don't understand why anybody would want less accountability for those judges, somebody serving for the public benefit.
And in addition to that, this only affects counties with more than 250,000 people. So really, this is focused on Maricopa County in Arizona.
And Yuma.
And Pima.
No, because Yuma is actually a huge county, and although the city of Yuma doesn't have that many, I believe the county of Yuma, Martine, you can fact check us on that, but I believe Yuma does have 250,000 people, or darn close.
I sit on a board with a couple judges that are, you know, subject to this particular proposition, and they're kind of nervous about it. I guess there's been an influx of money from out of state to fund this. What is the motivation here? I don't know, but they're... And it's weird because it's billed as if it's a good thing to have these lifetime people put in. Is this, do you think this is a party issue? What do you think? Because the Democrats tend to advocate for term limits.
I don't know if it's a party issue or not.
We're talking about Supreme Court nominees or appointees, right?
Yeah.
So maybe I have that opposite, though.
Well, It's what it is people are backwards in their thinking, and I can read one comment that's published in this manual here that describes how backward the thinking is. So this is from Laura Kuby, state Senate candidate and Legislative District 8, former Tempe vice mayor. So this is what Lauren says. As I submit this ballot, I believe that I'm the only person in Arizona willing to submit a vote yes statement on Prop 137. Well, she's not, because there's another dozen summaries here of people that are advocating for that. So she's wrong right there.
Oopsie-daisy.
That should tell you something about the merits of the legislative referral, because none of the legislatures that referred this ballot measure are willing to tell you why they did it and why they think you should vote yes on this. I don't even know what she's saying there, but here are her arguments. They believe judges should have lifetime appointment with no accountability. This is despite the fact that lifetime appointment for judges at the U.S. Supreme Court have been a failure, undercutting our democracy and destroying reproductive rights. So apparently you're not able to reproduce, and you don't have the right to reproduce because judges have lifetime tenure in the Supreme Court. Again, I'm for term limits, but I don't see how at all that has anything to do with your right to reproduce. Oh, unless you're actually flipping the right to reproduce on its head and defining it rather as the right to kill the fetus in utero. So, there's sarcasm there. They oppose abortion. They wrote the law specifically to try to keep abortion bans in place by removing any accountability or check on anti-abortion judges. Why? You are arguing that judges need more accountability, but you're voting yes that the term limits should be eliminated.
I don't understand. This person
is the biggest idiot, and yet they ascended to the ranks of vice mayor in Tempe. You want accountability. Term limits provide accountability. And what that has to do with the Supreme Court voting on your right to reproduce, I don't know.
Absolutely. And so, and she, what she's saying, you're using the term limits. And let's get it clear, like, term limits by definition mean when your term is over, it's over and you can't do any more. And that's not what we're talking about. In fact, the current system that we have for judicial officers is that they have a term. Sean already outlined that term, but that doesn't mean that they're termed out. They can't ever do it again. We as the voters have the ability to say, you know what, we like that judge and the way that they performed and held up their duties. So we're going to vote for them again and keep them as a judge because they're a good judge. Or we can say, no, they're horrible. They don't adhere to our Constitution, and we're not going to keep them in office. So they have a term limit, and every term when their term expires, then we have the ability to say, yeah, you can keep going or not. So that's the ultimate accountability of the people. And what she's advocating for is the opposite.
Yes.
Let's get rid of that system.
Let's get rid of terms.
Let's put a judge in, and they never have accountability. They will be there for life.
And that way we can
go and
address the issue that we have at the Supreme Court where it's lifetime tenure. It's like it is honestly the complete opposite. So if you were to read these arguments and to agree with her, then you would vote yes to this, and you would eliminate the terms that are imposed on these judges.
So is it that she's dumb, or she absolutely knows what she's doing because she's trying to trick the public?
Well, that's a good question.
She's saying something. She's like, you want accountability, don't you? Then you need to vote yes on this when it's the opposite of that.
Right.
And people aren't smart enough to read the fine print.
Right. You know what? That may be it. I wrote idiot right across the top of the page here because she is contradicting actually what the law would do. But maybe she's just evil and trying to con the people.
So if you vote yes on this, it says, voters will no longer have the ability to decide whether to retain those judges at the end of their judicial terms.
Right.
Those judges would instead be subject to a retention election only if they were convicted of a felony or a crime involving fraud or dishonesty.
So we don't get any chance to vote on whether or not they stay in office unless it's going to be a committee that's put in place, researches their conduct and finds that they've committed a fraud or some type of felony.
Or they filed bankruptcy, or they've had a foreclosure on their mortgage.
Yeah.
Or didn't meet the judicial performance review standards.
The judicial performance review standards are the voters.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, Yeah, I think that's dishonest is really what it is. I don't think she's that dumb.
Okay.
I think she thinks we're dumb.
Probably.
Well, we're not.
We're not dumb. Okay.
Today. What's her name? Judy? What's her name?
Lauren. Not today, Lauren. You're exposed.
Right here on this worldwide podcast radio show that so, nobody listens to.
Here is another one that it sounds good on its face, but it's actually really bad. So it's Prop 311. And what Prop 311 would do is it would require that counties that have more than 250,000 people. No, sorry, it doesn't have that requirement. It would require that first responders get paid $250,000 if they die in the line of duty.
Yeah.
And first responders, everybody loves first responders, right? Unless they're the police and there are Antifa riots, then you want to defund them. But most of the time, first responders, firefighters, ambulance or paramedics, police officers, they're the ones that protect us and help keep our children safe. So we want to make sure that they get the benefits that they need to continue doing that. That should come by way of their wages. And not forcing that everybody gets $250,000 if something happens. Now, if they want $250,000, if they die, then there's life insurance, and you can do that. So what it's doing is it's taking another chunk, another liberty out of the private market, and it's mandating that this payment be made for anybody that enrolls in this line of service. They already have the ability to do it. They chose that line of service. I appreciate that. But I don't want it pinned on me to pay their families if they die in the line of service. I want them to take responsibility as adults and get life insurance.
This reminds me of, so on its face, I don't want you to get the impression that we are not for first responders or, you know, officers, police. We are very much for that. However, this reminds me of that situation many years ago. Remember Davy Crockett?
Yes.
In Tennessee?
I just listened to that the other day. Yes.
Yes, tell the story.
So Davy Crockett was a congressperson.
Tennessee.
From Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
And he was voting for a measure where there was a big portion of, I think it was either Washington, D.C. or New York. I can't remember. But anyways, a big portion of one of those cities had burned down. And they wanted to pay $20,000 to the victims of that fire. And Davy Crockett said, yeah, okay, let's vote for it. And so he voted for it, and then when he was running for re-election, he was back in his home district in Tennessee, and he asked for the support of a voter, and the individual said, no, absolutely not. The moment you decided you can take my money and pay it to somebody else, regardless of how sympathetic their circumstances are, means that you are not keeping the Constitution, which means the government doesn't have the right to take private citizens' money and spend it however they see fit. If you, as congressmen and women and senators, would have donated a week's worth of your salary, you could have compensated those victims more than you actually gave them from taxpayer money. So you can't do that. You can't take taxpayer money to then be the hero and come to the rescue of victims of catastrophic events. We need to rely on other organizations, charitable organizations, or insurance, and deciding, looking at the future in advance, rather than taking money at force from the taxpayers and paying it to our pet projects and then claiming the crown as hero for doing so.
Yeah, so Prop 311 would have the effect of requiring the state of Arizona to pay $250,000, which would be referred to as the state death benefit, to the surviving spouse or children of a first responder killed in the line of duty. It would also create a new fund, a benefit fund, to pay this state benefit, a death benefit. And how is that going to be funded? Taxpayer money, okay? So just like Sean mentioned before, but it also, they'll use $20. They'd also increase the criminal punishments for aggravated assaults against peace officers and other first responders and require a $20 penalty fee be imposed on every criminal conviction to fund the state supplemental benefit fund. I don't know if that's going to do it. You know, I don't know if this fund is going to fill up. You're talking $250,000 with $20 in the pot here and there.
From criminals that can get convicted of crimes. Yeah. Because we all know that criminals
against peace officers
are going to pay up all of the penalties that are imposed on
them. So I just, as I read through this one, my heart would go out to those victims. But like Sean said, you've got remedies in place. We don't need more remedies. Take my money or your money, your tax money, and then funnel it this other way in the name of charity. There are other mechanisms to get that done. And having even read through the whole thing when I was reading about this new fund, my first question is, well, how are they going to pay for that? It's going to be my money, number one. Number two, they say, well, we're going to create this fund. So it's okay. We're going to create this new fund, and the way that we're going to pay for this is through these $20 increments on these aggravated assaults against officers. Every time somebody's convicted of that, we're going to charge them $20,
yeah.
You know, and that's going to fill this pot up with $250,000.
Yeah.
I'm like, that's unfeasible. So if that's not going to fill it up, how is it going to be filled up? Well, it's going to be made up from you and I, and that's something I just don't agree with. So, well, that's all the time we have for today. This is Life, Death, and Law. We'll talk to you next week.
If you have questions or want to know more about something that was discussed today, please call the law firm of Deason, Garner, and Hanson at 928-783-4575 or visit YumaEstatePlanning.com.
Want to hear more Life, Death, and the Law? You can find it on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and YouTube, or any other platform you listen to your podcasts.
Dear, has my honey-do list become a honey-don't?
I need to rent tools to do the to-do list.
Let's go to Southwest Lumber. They've got everything you need to do the to-dos, and they're voted Yuma's best year after year.
Get all your to-dos to done at Southwest Lumber, 1917 South Avenue B. Open Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 6 p.m. Go and ask about their rental specials, like half-day pricing on overnight rentals, Monday through Friday. When you rent on Saturday, Sundays are free. Call Southwest Lumber at 928-782-9867.
Country music star Lauren Elena live at the 12th Annual Bridget's Gift Western Dance and Barbecue.
Sponsored in part by Barclay Ag and Alexander Automotive Group.
Plus special guest Coffey Anderson.
Mr. Red, White, and Blue, you only miss me.
Saturday, October 26th at Cocopa Casino. Dinner is included. Tickets at bridgetsgift.com.
Our Arizona Corporation Commissioners make water choices that impact us all. Whether our children are forced to time their showers, whether we rip up gardens or store away bathwater, this reality may be closer than we think. You have the power to decide who leads Arizona's water future. You can protect this precious resource by voting in the ACC election. Make your voice heard this election year for your children, our families, our future.
Paid for by Environmental Defense Fund.
Overcoming drug addiction was difficult, but I found the path to recovery that worked for me. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Hi, this is Tony Driscoll, Vice President, General Manager of Eldorado Broadcasters. If you're the owner and or operator of a local business, I'd like you to hire us. Yes, I'd like you to add 560 KBLU to your team. For what it costs you for hourly employees, like that guy that at this very moment is leaning back in his chair, staring aimlessly, or the gal checking her Facebook page for the 17th time today, you could be reaching out to thousands of listeners with a positive message about your business. Sorry, guys, I didn't mean to bust you out like that, but hey, get back to work. If you want to reach the people listening to the radio right now, just like you are, give me a call at 928-344-4980. And if I'm not leaning back in my chair, staring aimlessly, or checking my Facebook page, I'll answer your call and we can talk about us going to work for you. 344-4980.
Eldorado Broadcasters is an equal opportunity employer.
The preceding show on 560 KBLU was a paid program. All opinions expressed by the program participants are solely their current opinions and do not reflect the opinions of 560 KBLU, Eldorado Broadcasters LLC, their respective parent companies or affiliates, or the companies with which the program participants are affiliated and may have been previously disseminated by them. The program participants' opinions are based upon information they consider reliable, but neither 560 KBLU Eldorado Broadcasters LLC nor its affiliates, nor the companies with which such participants are affiliated, warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such.
This is News Talk 560 KBLU, Yuma.